higher gas prices, Egypt's fault, and yours.
Let Marketplace be your guide to the modern world. Subscribe to the Marketplace Tech Report podcast. Find it on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
From APM in New York, I'm Mark Garrison in for David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. We're seeing oil prices rise to levels not seen in more than a year. Marketplace's Noel King happens to have firsthand experience with both of the key reasons oil prices are soaring. Good morning, Noel.
Good morning, Mark.
So one reason for the high price of oil is all the tension in Egypt. That's a place you know well. You were just reporting there until just a few months ago. What's going on?
Well, you know, Egypt is not a major oil-producing country, but it does control the Suez Canal. And when you've got millions of barrels of crude oil moving through that canal every day from countries like Saudi Arabia to Europe and North America, when Egypt gets tense, you have worries that the canal is going to close and all of that oil is going to have to be diverted around the African continent. 6,000 miles. Now, the Suez is a major source of revenue for the Egyptian government. And one thing I learned reporting there is no matter who's in charge in Egypt, the priority really is that canal stays open.
Okay, so that's Egypt. And on the supply side, Noel, you're now with us in America in the car happy land of Los Angeles. So you're part of the demand side. So talk about what demand in the U.S. is doing to oil prices.
Well, first of all, U.S. crude stockpiles are dwindling in a way that's even surprised a lot of industry observers. Now, there's a couple of reasons. First, demand for gasoline is up. Some recent encouraging hiring data has made people optimistic. More people are out on the roads. And of course, this is peak vacation season. But there's another big logistical reason, Mark, and that's over the past few months, we've seen the opening of a few pipelines and rail routes in this country that have allowed oil companies to move these huge supplies of crude oil out of the middle of the country and into places like the Gulf Coast, where it's refined. And then that lowers the amount of crude in the stockpile.
Okay, Marketplace's Noel King, thanks very much.
Thank you.
The markets are reacting to the latest word from Fed Chief Ben Bernanke. Let's talk about what they're thinking and what we need to know. Susan Schmidt is head of equities at Mesirow Financial and joins us. Good morning, Susan.
Good morning.
So yesterday we got Fed minutes and we heard Chair Ben Bernanke speak. He said the Fed will keep stimulating the economy as needed, at least. So talk about what was the most important takeaway from what he said.
Well, the minutes recapped a statement that he had made really, you know, the prior week as we went into the end of the second quarter that got the markets very, very nervous because he mentioned the end of quantitative easing. So the end of the Fed doing these large-scale asset purchases. And although the market knew that was coming, they don't like to recognize that up front. And so I think that caused this sort of panic knee-jerk reaction. You saw the market settle. We saw this pullback in pricing. And having the minutes come out yesterday, they were very neutral when you read through them, and you got to see the entire discussion of the committee, what sides are thinking what. It's split down the middle, and they're very sensitive to the state of the economy right now. So I think the market reaction to the minutes, which almost seems scrubbed, they didn't really tell you very much, was very mixed. But there's confidence as he came out, Bernanke came out and spoke later last night at an event, and when you heard him in the Q&A, he reinforced, it's okay. We're really waiting for stronger signs in the economy. We're not going to take away support too soon. And particularly reinforcing the message that this low interest rate, the zero interest rate policy, is really going to stay in play for some time.
Okay, let's talk about consumer spending, something we often speak about, how important it is to the U.S. economy. Just getting this morning retail numbers for June, seeing a 4.2% increase. Just in general, how's it going for the American consumer these days?
Consumer is actually doing pretty well. I think that we're seeing some, on a relative basis, it's very surprising that we've seen this continued strength in consumer spend. It's gone on for a lot longer than we would expect and not typical given past cycles. So the consumer is delevered. We're seeing high consumer sentiment numbers, so they're very confident. And I think the fact that we haven't seen a huge spike in gas prices for the summer, which we have seen in some years past, we're seeing some confidence come from the fact that housing prices are getting better, so the property that they own may not be underwater anymore. It's definitely back gaining value. I think that's all buoying that market, and the consumer is feeling pretty good. So
okay,
I think
Susan
that's a
Schmidt,
sector that investors need to look at.
Okay, Susan Schmidt, Mesirow Financial, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Do you enjoy the music we play between stories? Visit the Marketplace Music section to browse playlists for all of our programs and to buy those songs on Amazon. A percentage of each purchase goes towards supporting our programs. Find more online at marketplace.org/music.
We want to talk now about alternative payments, all the ways you can spend money without using cash. Credit and debit cards are the biggest, but there are plenty of new options. Joining us now to talk about what they can do for us is Adrian Hill, who's hosting Marketplace Money this weekend. Hi there, Adrian.
Hey, Mark.
So we're starting to see some of these hit the mainstream. I did see that my drugstore the other day, they would allow me to pay with Google Wallet if I so chose. Now, what do these things offer to people that they can't already do with credit cards?
Well, what we're really talking about here, Mark, are mobile devices for the most part. A lot of this stuff is mobile money transfer, mobile payments. So instead of pulling out your wallet and maybe shuffling through your cards and having stuff fall out, which happens to me all the time, you just pull out your phone, you touch it up to the device in the drugstore, you pay for it automatically. There's no shuffling of things.
Now, Adrian, this argument about a phone being somehow more convenient than reaching into your wallet, I mean, do you buy that? Like, it just seems like regardless, you're going to have something in your pocket and pull something out or take something out of your handbag. I just don't know how this is more convenient than swiping a credit card.
Well, and there are a lot of questions about that. And I think that's one reason that maybe we haven't seen the adoption of these technologies that we'd expected to see so far. There are arguments people make that actually, if done right, this technology could not only be our smart card, but it could also be the sort of drugstore loyalty card, or it could be a punch card at the coffee shop. And so there you can start to see how it could be more convenient.
Okay, so let's say you want to try this, you want to pay with your phone, but it can be really overwhelming because there are so many different services out there and not all of them work at every store. So how do you choose a system that could work for you?
Well, it's complicated. All these companies are sort of fighting for market share and fighting to be the next big thing. And I think the first decider has to be what kind of phone you have, because not all phones support all the technologies that are out there.
Okay. And now a lot of people also will have concerns about security if they're doing mobile payments. How safe is the technology?
Well, I think, again, it depends on the technology, but something like Google Wallet actually claims to be safer than a traditional wallet. There are security codes you type in on your phone before you make that payment. If you lose your phone, you can go online and cancel it right away. So some people are saying it could be safer once we figure out the kinks than what we're doing today.
And, you know, sometimes people will talk about credit cards and these new alternative payments as if cash is dead, but that's just not the reality, though, is it?
No, that's the favorite thing I learned when I was looking into this, and hat tip to the Washington Post Wonk blog on this. But the amount of currency in circulation actually reached an all-time high at the end of last month.
Okay, Adrian Hill with Marketplace Money. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
And finally, cash can burn a hole in your pocket, or just burn. The smoldering kind is causing an expensive headache for a woman in Canada. She says she's out $1,200 Canadian after a fat stack of bills melted under a table lamp. Canada's money is made of plastic, which the government says lasts longer and is harder to counterfeit than paper. But many Canadians complain the money melts easily in hot cars or even a dryer cycle. The woman will get her $1,200 back eventually. She says she'll have to send them to the central bank, and replacing them could take 8 months. In New York, I'm Mark Garrison. This is the Marketplace Midday Update. This is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.